welcome to episode number 3 of The Exchange, presented by Confederation Group. I'm Sam McPhail, and with me, like always, is my co-host, Blake Doyle. How are you doing today, Blake?
I am good. Same as last week, and same as the week before. Still good.
Probably same as next week, too, eh?
Pretty consistent.
Yeah, so this is our third episode. Everything seems to be going okay so far. Have you heard anything this week?
About the episode? You know what? It's funny. You kind of track the downloads and the listening and some of the metrics on social media. Things are good.
Things are pretty good. I think that people are talking about it and maybe challenging their ideas a bit and seeing what's coming next. There's some curiosity aspect to it, I think.
And we've got a great guest this week.
Great guest today. It was hard to get this guy. Very, very difficult.
He's been busy.
And he's such a big-shouldered fellow, we could barely get him through the door.
Well,
so.
With our heads in his shoulders,
yeah, exactly.
It's hardly enough room.
It's hard to do it. But yeah, Lee Reed, who is the promotions coordinator and community engagement with UPI Athletics. We kind of talked about what it means to be a UPI Panther, what it means for community engagement, and kind of the success we've actually seen very recently of UPI Athletics. So in the past week alone, we can kind of talk about both internally, who we have in our office who have done really well, and also the UPI Women's Basketball champion, or AUS championships. So.
And Lee is a newcomer. In fact, we're going to do a little bit of a clip on a newcomer.
It's just a
promotion.
Full episode. We get to touch all aspects of what we do in this episode.
It's a lot of synergy. Everything interrelates so well. So
we can start with Kaylee. So Kaylee McKinnon is our HR and recruitment administrator.
But exceptional young lady.
Exceptional. She's also a student at Holland College, taking her HR kind of designation or whatever.
Now, this is post. So I graduated UPI.
Yep.
We're
about to graduate. Fingers crossed, we're almost there.
So Kaylee did graduate from UPI, played sports UPI. Now she's at Holland College getting an HR designation. And go ahead, she's pretty successful.
So, yeah, this fall, and it's documented pretty well on our social media, but so this fall she won the Atlantic Championships for the soccer team at UPI, or at Holland College, sorry. But that wasn't enough. She decided, no, I'm going to play volleyball too. And this past weekend in Sackville, New Brunswick, the Holland College women's volleyball team took home the ACAA championships. So it's a second banner for Kaylee. We're very proud of her, and she'll be going to Quebec City next week.
Somewhere
in Quebec.
Yeah. If she gets a time
next
off.
Week. Yeah, we got. She still has to put in her formal ask for time off.
And she's going to work this weekend to make
up
for it.
Yeah, full hours.
So we actually have two volleyball players in our office. There's Zaylee and Kaylee. Both are on the championship volleyball
team. A newer hire, yep.
So big supporters of Holland College and great candidates, great students, but great people to participate in our organization. So if you don't know Kaylee or Zaylee or the UPEI volleyball team, come on into our office.
It's Holland College.
Holland College, yes.
Them too, though.
Well, so back to that. So the UPEI, we've got Leon, but Kaylee, in addition to the two championships she won through Holland College, also is a champion victor for the CRFC Rugby Club.
She does
big
it
year.
All.
She really does.
Yeah.
And
makes
HR.
Me look bad, but whatever.
Well, you got big shoes to
I'll do
step
my best
into.
This summer. So on top of that, we talked briefly that the UPI women's basketball won the AUS championships in Halifax this weekend. And Lee kind of touched on that, but this was pre-recorded. So we just kind of touched about how important it is to have such a kind of big sports community, athletics community. And on top of that, next week, the U Sports Women's Hockey Nationals will be at UPEI, hosted by the girls' team.
That's the second time.
The second time, exactly. And their team was highly ranked. And then they're in the top 10 in Canada this year again, too. So pretty impressive.
If you know Lee, he doesn't talk about it in the interview, but if there's any businesses out there that want to participate and sponsor the women's hockey, please reach out to Lee. He'd be more than happy to accommodate. And there's a big cost for the university to put these events on. So I think if there is interest from anybody listening, reach out to Lee Reed. He'd be more than happy to accommodate a business contribution.
And his Welsh accent.
He does have it. Well, we're going to talk about that. It's actually, you know what? So we did some research. I thought it was Welsh. He had confirmed it's not Welsh. In fact, I thought it was South African.
No.
It's
Australian,
not,
no?
No. I think it might be deep south U.S.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Pardon my cough.
Yeah. He's, anyway, great guy.
Yeah. So all this women's sports the past week or so and then moving into next week, what does this mean for the men's team?
There's no gender equality in UPI and success.
Not, so. We're not doing too hot. The men's team's got to pull up their socks. But anyways, maybe next year. You never know. But yeah, so that's kind of our last week in a nutshell, and we're very proud of both Kaylee and Zaylee for Holland College. So that leads us into our next segment of political pundits. So some big political happenings the past week, both provincially, nationally, and also south of the border. So what have you heard this week, Blake?
Well, lots of stuff. Boy, I don't know where to start. So I may go back a little bit farther. This past few days ago, actually, Charlottetown made a commitment. So the council committed that they're hell-bent and focused on getting a new multi-seat entertainment complex. So that's controversial in some
respects. Very controversial. Yeah, you see letters to the editor every day, about, especially when it was very in the media, but now they've said, no, we want this. And whether the federal government agrees or not, like, they're still going forward with
it. And if the federal government does fund it, does that mean the sports teams that are resident of the EastLink Center, like the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, can they actually be in that facility? So, you know, there's no question. In fact, Sam's done some research. We've done some research both at the EastLink Center. Sam's done some research on community rinks. We're just publishing a report here now. I think it's pretty clear that Charlottetown needs some more ice pads. Mm-hmm. Do they need a facility comparable to the beautiful Credit Union Place? Maybe. That's a great facility. Can they fill the current one with the teams they have? No. Arguably not. And do the teams even want a new one? So
yeah, it's hard to say.
Who's paying for it, where the money comes from? We do need the ice surfaces for sure, but it's going to be a tough decision if taxpayers have to carry this for a while.
Very tough decision. So we'll flip from one city to the next. Summerside City Council released their budget, I guess, on Monday, so yesterday for us. And what was there any kind of key points to that, or any main funding
sources?
Well,
like most budgets, everybody wants to be balanced. So once again, they've committed to a balanced budget, although I think last year they may have slipped a little bit in their commitment. $53 million budget, so not a small amount of money that the city is managing. Deputy Mayor Norma Coleman recognized that costs have gone up about 13% over the last 5 years, but their revenues have remained pretty consistent. So obviously you can't do that for too long before you have to
adjust. Yeah, you got to pinch your pennies and take your cans back to the depot.
So maybe that's what the city, in fact, that maybe they're going to set up a depot where the old fire hall is, because that's one of the things that they're looking at refurbishing. The other one that I was kind of interested in, because I do have a bit of a, I guess, an interest in alternate and green energy, there's a $10 million contribution to expand the Echo Business Park. And I think the intent there, they've done some neat things with solar. They're pretty progressive with wind. They're trying to attract some entrepreneurs to do some investment in this Echo Park. So we'll see. We'll see what that turns out to. But Summerside, you know, they do have vision and they do have stubbornness and they tend to be successful
in
what they
do. Sounds familiar to someone I know.
Well, maybe, you know what, we have an office there. Maybe I need to spend more time in Summerside.
Would have caught up there. You can stay up there too.
I don't know if Summerside would want that.
No, maybe not. So switching to provincial politics. On Sunday, March 1st, Corey Deagle's bill on kind of around vaporizers and vapes, I guess as the kids are saying, became law. So now you have to be 21 or older to buy vaping products, and just to kind of see where that will go with Health Canada or whatever. But a pretty considerable thing, it kind of came, the leadership came from PEI, from Corey Deagle, who happened to know pretty well. And I think he was on national
CBC,
news,
yeah.
Kind of talking about it and promoting it, especially from his view as a hockey coach and seeing the kids that are 14, 15, 16 doing it. You wonder where they get it, but if you raise the age a bit, maybe they'll be less accessible.
It's, you know, there's a great young, he's got a long political career, I suspect, in front of him, but this is great for a backbench MLA to bring legislation forward. I don't know if this was supported initially by his caucus. I mean, it certainly was when he proceeded with the legislation. So from my observation, and I think from anything I've looked at through stock markets and how it's affecting things, this vaping is an epidemic that needs to be curtailed. So it's progressive to see this come in. It's interesting that you can't buy a vape at you know, maybe 20 year old, but you can go to the cannabis store and buy cannabis. So
if you have glaucoma though,
You might not find your way. I don't know.
maybe not. There's definitely back and forth. They're same as cigarettes. Like, are cigarettes going up too? Or if you can go buy cannabis, you can go buy alcohol when you're 19.
Well, cigarettes have filters. Cannabis doesn't. But there's no question that these vapes are just destroying lungs. And there's lots
popcorn
of...
popcorn lung, yeah. And there's
lots
studies
of evidence.
Show that there's been deaths in probably... I think there's been a couple at least in Canada,
yeah.
And Toronto and Ontario region.
So great, great success for young... Corey Deagle from
exactly, and I
District
think
this will be
the first staple in his successful political career, and we hope he goes well from here.
What else? Any other excitement that you've noticed?
So I guess south of the border, maybe not as interesting as politics. But
this is more interesting.
So this week, Mayor Pete—I don't even know how to say his last name, so I'm not going to try. He's out of the Democratic primaries, and he decided to back Joe Biden right before Super Tuesday, which is essentially today.
So what are your any projections? What do you think is going
to
happen?
I think from here on out, I think Joe Biden will kind of start to steamroll. I think there'll be some more socialistic view states.
Feel the burn.
That will feel the burn.
The socialist burn.
I don't think, but a lot of the kind of, let's say, right-wing Democrats will be on Joe.
Centrist Democrats.
Centrist.
You know, so
closer to right.
There was something on CBC radio this week about the Democratic Congress trying to get expatriates, so people living in Canada, to vote. So I think the Democrats are cooked. I don't think it mattered who wins this. Mm-hmm. They may as well put Sanders in because I think Trump's going to eat them alive, and he'll get another term, and the stock market will perform great. And I don't think Joe Biden...
So are they asking you to go down and vote? Is that what you're getting at here?
No, I'm not an expat, just an occasional resident. But I don't really see any strong candidates in the Democratic Congress that could take on Trump.
It's almost spread too thin at this point, too, and it's hard to say.
Bloomberg, he'll throw some money at whoever is successful, but I don't see the train stopping. And it's a crazy train. Right. But the markets do like the crazy train, so...
Exactly.
Anyway, the Premier spoke at the Rotary address in Charlottetown.
He did. That was a week or so ago.
Yeah. Any feedback from that?
I didn't go, and I didn't actually... I listened to parts of it. I think the general theme was cheery, and he touched on kind of his most important... His three main kind of... What he was focusing
priorities,
on. Priorities. I think it was... Was it healthcare, affordable housing, and climate change? Is that...
And so the
climate change for sure.
Interesting one, because that $1 million kind of grant for people to try to find a way to combat climate change, which is...
Right, and business people to kind of...
Yeah, and it's not a lot of money. No. So it's a great political point. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that scores. It sounds good. It's a great soundbite, but $1 million would not go far. So I'm not sure how they're going to spread that around. I did see the Premier's address in Summerside at the Chamber of Commerce in the fall. I didn't see this one, but another article that we saw this week, Kerry Campbell picked it up. It was on our first guest that we had.
It was so long ago.
So
Peter Van Baker, right. So essentially the Green Party has stated that they're going to be a lot harsher, let's say, as an opposition in the new session of the legislature coming up, I guess, right after Easter, or I guess it'd be first week of April, I should say. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there, because we kind of touched on it with them after we turned the microphone off, and he said, well, you never know, like maybe something's coming out today. And then, in fact, he put out that article later saying, did they abandon good governance? So it was kind of some shots fired. And I think there's definitely some, let's say, raging bulls in his opposition caucus that are ready to pounce and say that enough's enough, we want answers, whether it be healthcare critic, agriculture critic, finance critic, whatever you want to...
I think this will be a much more ruckus session, which it should be. I mean, the love-in... It's great to probably get a little bit more done, but I think the purpose of opposing and opposition and legislative question period needs to be a little bit more direct. So I think it's a progressive change.
I think so, too. And I think it's healthy. Like
you need
kind of the headbutting that we see often in other political arenas. But
are the Liberals going to be at the session? Are they going to be...
I think they'll show up.
They'll be there, too. So, and they may have some things to say, hard to say. But, you know, the good thing is the Conservative government now have had a little over a year to get their feet under them.
Yeah, it'll be basically a full year when they go to sit.
So they'll know their portfolios. They should be better positioned to take on the challenge that you'd expect in the legislature.
Let's hope so. So that's political pundits for this week. Again, I apologize for my coarse voice, but...
Well, you know what? It could be worse.
I'm battling a man cold. I'm here, so...
It could be Lee Reed's voice. So,
exactly.
I mean, you're much better.
I'm doing all right. So that'll lead us into our next segment of economy experts. So a couple big statistics in terms of the economy this past week. So over the past year, from 2018 to 2019, Canada seen a 18.6 increase in direct investment. So that equals roughly $66.8 billion. So that's companies from outside of Canada coming in and saying, okay, we want to do business in Canada. And obviously that might have changed in the past year, but this is statistics, this is how they work. And that was from Statistics Canada. So have you seen, what do you think?
Well, we talked about this last week. So $66 billion I'm not even sure how that measures against traditional. It's 18% greater, which is very good. I wonder with some of these friction that we've seen on pipelines and on disruption of travel and transit, if foreign companies are looking differently at Canada
today. And even
today,
like BlackRock, for example, like a month ago, whatever, said that they're only going to invest in companies that have a climate change lens on now. So you never know what that means either, where they would go towards energy companies maybe with fossil fuels, but now they have to kind of, they're reevaluating.
So last night, I think Chevron was on Mad Money with Jim Cramer. And Jim, he's not a big fan of fossil fuels. In fact, he's a big supporter of Tesla. He wasn't earlier. But he did challenge Chevron and said, look, is your oil industry the same as the tobacco industry? And it was a good question. And, you know, the Chevron CEO said, no, in fact, we're not. There's a dependency. We need fossil fuel. And they want to be part of the change to alternate renewable energies. So we'll see if these sort of large cap fossil companies can adapt. Probably they can't meaningfully, but...
Not the big ones. Like, it's hard to pivot your entire strategy and go the opposite way.
Anyway, they'll have to play some sort of a role as a tobacco company. They've divested it and they've gotten into food and other products. So what else are you seeing? What else are there economic activities?
Big one that CBC PEI actually put out was regarding the coronavirus. So this has been going on for the past month and kind of been scarier and scarier. But essentially, the Conference Board of Canada said that the coronavirus is expected to take a $550 million toll on the tourism industry in Canada. So it kind of comes to say, if PEI as a province is so reliant on tourism, what does that mean for us? What does that mean moving forward? Obviously, $550 million isn't our entire thing, but even if we're a little chunk of that, that's still a lot of money not going into the pockets of our businesses or our households here.
So the Conference Board put that out, so I didn't see that stat. That's interesting. In the Guardian this week, we'll talk about the same thing and how the coronavirus might be affecting PEI. Mm-hmm. When we had the SARS issue in 2014...
And they kind of compared that too, but yeah.
So the economic impact at that point was $5.25 billion, so much more substantial. It really walloped the tourism sector. If you look at PEI, so we've got a 6.4% dependency on tourism, 6.4% of our GDP. So if you look at what's happening, and I talk to people fairly frequently around the globe, I was speaking to people in the Philippines yesterday. They talked about Hong Kong's restaurants being empty. There's been big changes in the pollution generated from the manufacturing sector in China. Airline seats are dropping. So you see this rippling. Certainly nobody's taking cruises much anymore. So how is that going to affect the tourism sector here in PEI? And more importantly, are companies preparing for that change? So we will explore that a little bit later.
Right. And you can almost spin off of that because PEI and Atlantic Canada as a whole exports so much lobster to China. So will that affect lobster sales too? Or seafood in general, oysters, whatever the case may be?
Or processed potatoes?
Anything, yeah. So we'll see the effects as they go on, but it will remind you to wash your hands if you get the chance.
And don't put your hands near your mouth.
And eat your vegetables, please.
So it's not just potatoes. Actually, we have a big aerospace, so engine overhaul. Even if there's not enough flights, what's going to happen in 18, 24 months if the engines are lasting longer than projected? So
because they're not going as much. Yeah, exactly.
Lots of impacts. Anyway, I think we will have an impact here in PEI, and I'm sure that the government have that well in control and are managing mitigating our issues. So
if they ask us, we'll help them, though.
Absolutely. We've got lots of ideas, as you can list. Tune in every week in the Exchange to hear them.
Exactly. So what else has been kind of... Any other statistics released regarding the PEI economy or the Canadian economy as a whole?
It's funny. There is an article that came out just recently, last few hours, actually, I think on Monday. Patrick Brannan, who is with APEC, and actually a former friend of mine from my days in Halifax.
Former, so you're no friends?
We are. I just don't see him. He comes over like once a year to do a little economic update down at the Delta. So I see him occasionally, but not very often. But anyway, there was an article, and Sam Sanderson, the GM of the Construction Association, talked about
it. I actually seen him last night.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. So he talked about the growth, and this is the third record year in a row for new home construction of PEI. So Patrick Brannan says there's no sign of a slowing for PEI. The momentum's continuing. Last year, we did $500 million in new construction. The year before was $350 million. The vacancy rate has changed a bit, so we're seeing more inventory come online. It's gone from 0% to 1.2% in October. I guess my question is, there are some issues. If the economy starts to slow because of corona, then what happens to this surplus of construction that we have in the market if we don't need the labor to fill the construction? So there's a ripple potential that can happen
here.
That
is a year or two out, yeah.
We're 2 years out, or maybe 18 months, but these are kind of the impacts. Today, everything is great, but you got to be looking to the horizon, as I'm sure the government are.
Exactly.
And they're preparing for these rainy days.
That's their job, so it makes sense. Another statistic that came out this week, we're just full of statistics today, is that PEI is actually leading the country in retail sales growth year over year at 5.6%. So this is essentially double the national average of 2.4%. And the next closest one is Ontario at 5.4%. So I guess just to kind of take that in consideration, that shows the strength of our economy if retail sales are that high. But we don't, it doesn't really dive into exactly where they might be, especially because it compares bigger cities like Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. But it's still, it's a positive statistic to kind of say, okay, well, PEI is doing pretty good in retail.
But every time you build a new house, you've got to get new brooms, new garbage cans, new drapes. So all these things probably contribute to that.
Exactly.
Growth, but that's a big disparity. PEI is on a tear.
On a tear.
And speaking of tears, there's a bit of a tear in the mortgage rates. So I think Australia maybe dropped their overnight rate to 500 basis points. U.S. just today dropped theirs. Canada, I think, meet tomorrow. We're at 1.75 today. I think they'll have to drop their rates as well. So the Bank of Canada.
So what will that mean for someone like me looking to buy a house?
So if you have a student loan, it might be cheaper to finance. But if you're buying a house, I guess it depends. So the rates will be lower if banks are willing to loan money. Mm-hmm. That's a mutually exclusive issue. But if you have a mortgage you're renewing, it's great. If you're retiring and need savings, it's not great. So people who are trying to survive in this low interest rate environment, when you probably built your projections on 8%, 6, 8, 10% as a return, to be getting 0%, which is essentially what you're getting if you have a savings account, you're slipping behind. So GDP inflation is arguably 1.5, 1.8%. Every month you keep money in your account, it's worth less. Not good.
Not good.
So for you, it's great.
It's good for me. Okay.
For someone my age who's close to retirement, it's not so good.
You will never retire, but okay. So to kind of wrap that up in terms of the economy, we talked briefly last week about the newcomer program that our firm, Confederation Group, is doing to integrate like newcomer women and empower them in the workforce. So hot shot over here, Blake Doyle was on interviewed by CBC again this week, and we're getting a lot of coverage.
And wait till we hit the Confederation Analytics.
Oh, just crazy.
Some of this data that we pulled together today is actually driven by our team internally that are finding this information, and we've got some cool things happening. We'll have more cool data every time we get together.
Every time.
But
So yeah, you kind of gave a full rundown of what the newcomer project entitles and how we're gonna empower newcomer women to go out into the workforce and find meaningful work and hopefully drive the retention rates of these newcomers as well.
Yeah, it's good. It was a great article, great interview. I think Eminem is the fastest rapper, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. He was previously, and on his new album now he speaks even faster. This interview is also very fast. It's a lot of verbal explosion. So it goes quick.
So we're going to play that for you now. It's a couple minutes, and then we'll be back momentarily.
There's been a lot of talk lately about a shortage of workers in a number of industries, and there are warnings that the situation will only get worse as more and more baby boomers head into retirement. A new program starts next month on PEI, geared to encourage and prepare women who have newly immigrated to PEI to enter the workforce. Blake Doyle is with the Confederation Group, which is putting on the Newcomer Work Ready program for women, and Angela spoke with him earlier.
Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you, Angela?
I'm fine. Tell us about the Newcomer Work Ready program for women. What's the idea behind this?
So the whole purpose is, how do you engage a subset of the economy to participate in the labor market? So if you look at what's happening in the economy, this is globally, but certainly within Prince Edward Island, we've got a strong economy. There's more people working today, but the unemployment rate and the available resource pool continues to shrink. So I think the economy needs to find ways to empower people to participate. And one group that probably needs a little bit more support and confidence and empowerment is newcomers, and specifically newcomer women.
So what's involved with this program? How long is it, and what kinds of things will they learn?
So this program, it'll go for about 4 months, and we're going to offer it in two locations, Summerside and Charlottetown. We've had lots of good response so far, but we'd like to see more people participate. The program itself will touch a lot of issues, and it depends on the respondents and what their level of language sufficiency is, what their level of education, what their backgrounds are. But we want to walk people through the cultural barriers of entering the PEI workforce. We want to make sure they're confident in English, if their primary language is not English. We want to make sure they understand some of the nuances of how to engage in our culture, because it's probably very different from where they came from. The ultimate goal is to make sure that people are engaged, employed, and participating in the labor market at the end of this process.
And do you have some government money to help with this?
So this was an RFP. It's funded, I believe, by the federal government. It's managed by Skills PEI. I think it's very progressive that they've come up with this strategy. We responded to an RFP, and we're delighted to be participating in delivery of this.
When does it begin?
So we're going to start just before March break. We'll have the cohort identified. We're going to introduce people to the program, and then we're going to start formally just right after the March break period. So we'll let people spend time with their families, and we'll kick things off right after the March break.
And how many women do you hope to have?
We've got capacity in our two locations for quite a few. So it really depends on who's interested, who wants to participate, who's not in the labor market that wants to be today. So I would encourage anybody, if you are listening to this, you know somebody that should be part of this program, you know, make sure you subscribe, apply, and try to participate. The more, the better, as far as I'm concerned. There's a great market of people that should be better engaged, and we want to support them to get into the market.
And so ultimately, at the end of this program, what kinds of skills would they have?
So there's a lot of things. So depending on the language efficiency, we do have an ESL-trained educator, so they can work on bringing their sufficiency up if that's required. We've got contacts in different industries and different businesses. We're going to take people and give them tours of those markets so they've got some comfort and familiarity of how the PEI labor market and how the employment environment is on PEI. We've got a number of really exciting guests, presenters coming in to talk about their experiences. So these are successful people, and specifically successful women, newcomers, who have engaged in the PEI market and have been successful. And I think that's the kind of motivation that some people, I think, will get a real charge from.
And why a focus on newcomer women?
Yeah, that's funny. So we have a bit of a history of this. So I've done master's research in 2005, actually, on integrating newcomers. We actually did a pretty big formal project in 2012, and we looked at underutilized labor pools within the province, and we looked at newcomers, foreign workers, persons with disabilities, mature workers, youth, First Nations. One of the groups, a subset of that newcomer group, are women. And culturally, not terribly unlike PEI, but maybe we're a little bit more farther ahead in the continuum, sometimes it's harder for women to manage the obligations that they have been encumbered with at home and still enter the workforce. So this is an opportunity for people who either have had professional designations and want to get back into the workforce, or maybe haven't participated in the labor market and want to get in. We want to give them the tools and the confidence so they're empowered to get into the market and achieve their goals.
What are you looking forward to about this?
You know, we've done a lot of work with newcomers over maybe 20, 25 years, and it's really encouraging to see success. I think we're quite confident that we're going to see successful outcomes with this process. We've done some good research to back up. We've got curriculum developed. We've got a lot of interest. So I think, for me, the opportunity is how do you get people from a foreign environment, transplant them into PEI, adapt to this culture, and then participate and thrive in our labor market. And our labor market needs more participation. The success will be measured by how many people engaged and how do employers react to that engagement.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Blake Doyle is with the Confederation Group. The Newcomer Work Ready program for women begins next month in Charlottetown and Summerside.
So that was Mr. Blake Doyle on CBC Radio with, was it Angela Walker?
Yeah. Main Street. Was it Main Street?
I think it was played on Main Street with Matt. Yeah. Anyway, so that kind of gives you a better idea of what we're trying to do and how...
One of the many... We had a lot of prongs in here.
Full of prongs.
Yeah.
Like a barbecue prong, just ready to attack.
Anyway, we'll drop that metaphor. But we will chase anything, and we do have a lot of depth internally. So.
I think so, too. Well, just me and you alone, like crazy.
What more would you need? Yeah.
A lot of things, probably. Anyways, so now it is time for our...
Feature interview.
I think this will be probably pretty popular among the UPEI student body, because Lee is a very popular guy on campus, and he's nice to everyone he meets. He's happy and friendly, and he's always checking to make sure everyone's doing okay, and whether you're in athletics or not. And you didn't go to school with him, or you never experienced that, but you knew him through rugby, and it kind of you can sense that from him right away too.
Yeah, he's a pretty endearing guy, and he's very accommodating. He's approachable. He's a giant. You can't miss him, I'm sure, walking across campus, but you couldn't have a better ambassador for sport, community engagement, in this case UPEI. They're very fortunate to have him, and I think he really helps drive student engagement and community engagement. I know we've sponsored some things at UPEI that I fundamentally probably would never have sponsored, but you can't say no to somebody who is approaching things with the way that Lee approaches.
Exactly, and especially as a newcomer, he adopted PEI's new home, and now he doesn't ever plan on leaving, and he said his kids don't plan on leaving either, so.
That's perfect.
One more for the good guys, we'll say.
Yeah, we need more Lees.
Exactly.
What did Trudeau say? We need more Canada, which kind of, I don't know. Anyway, I won't even touch on that one, but
we
do need more Lees, not me and Trudeau.
Exactly. Okay, so here's Lee Reed. Today's guest is arguably the most popular personality on campus at the University of Prince Edward Island. Lee Reed is the coordinator of promotions and community engagement for UPEI Athletics and Recreation. You can catch him at just about every UPEI sports game, cheering on our athletes and making sure everyone feels included. I'm sure if UPEI had a shuffleboard team, he'd find a way to make that interesting too. Originally from Banstead, England, Lee moved to PEI with his family in May of 2016 and has been an Islander ever since. Welcome to the Exchange, Lee.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. In fact, you've been here to PEI prior to 2016. We'll talk about this. And if you haven't met Lee before, you're going to love his melodic Welsh accent. Really kind of funny. It's almost like listening to one of those sleep apnea.
Right, yeah.
So Lee, tell us about your first, because you're an ambassador for PEI. I'm not shocked, but it's always refreshing to see how passionate you are about PEI.
Yeah.
So tell us about your first experiences, your decision to come to PEI in 2016, what life's been like here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the introduction. I like that, and you took it to a lower level. That was pretty nice. And and I'm English, just to get that fact. Not Welsh, not South African, Australian, or a Kiwi, but a Welsh. No, definitely not Welsh. You know, I am extremely fond of PEI. My first visit here was in 1999 at Christmas. I took off on the 26th of December from Heathrow and never got here to the 29th. And in a little three-seater...
It's hard to get away, it's like the bridge.
Exactly. And I landed in a little three-seater plane when they weighed me at Halifax, said, you're 280, you've got to sit right in the middle of the back. And I knew this is where I wanted to live. I mean,
because you couldn't get off the three-seater. You didn't have enough fuel to return.
Exactly. It was almost in the cargo hold. And I remember getting off and getting out this tiny little airport, and my father-in-law standing there, and he always says, you know, I didn't know whether you were going to get a face with of thunder or you were going to get off smiling. And I was smiling. I realized that if it took 3 days to get to this place, this is where I wanted to live in the future. So I think
I may have been one of the first people to meet you at the pitch when you came to rugby.
Right.
With your kids for the rookie rugby. I haven't seen you not smile since then. That seems like a long time ago. It's 2016 or 2017.
Yeah.
So you have adopted PEI, or PEI's adopted you. You're really passionate about it. What is it you find so unique about PEI? It's different about other places because you've traveled.
Yeah, I have. And I think the thing about it is that if you want to come to PEI, the community will embrace you. If you come here for work and it's just for work and you're here for a certain amount of period and you don't buy into what PEI is, they'll know pretty damn quick. And they'll be, you know, they just won't be forward with you. You won't make friends. Where when we moved here in 2016, it's taken us 18 months up to that point. Even with a Canadian wife and three kids of dual nationality, it still took that time. And I'm not going to lie to you that if Harper hadn't been voted out, we probably wouldn't have gone in. There was a thing going around at the time where that if you had gone abroad like Cindy had to teach, and you'd taken your qualifications and gone across, you know, and worked away, he saw it as a negative because you'd walked away from the country. Whereas Trudeau saw it differently. Trudeau saw that you were going to return back to Canada with the knowledge you have of working away, and we were going to be embraced. So we were very lucky that happened. And of course, Brexit happened at the same time, and that's a whole other thing. But you have to want to be here. And once you be here and you realize that this community really does care about itself and does want to do the best for each other, then it's incredible.
I see you've grown a beard like Trudeau, or like you. Sam had one until
my head was too itchy.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to shave mine because somebody actually...
Is that a beard? Okay, sorry. We, when I was a kid, we called that bum fluff. I don't know, it's like peach something, somebody said yesterday. So, you're doing well.
It's coming. It's been a couple of months.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
So let's talk, Sam, you know Lee from university.
Actually, I met Lee at a basketball game, would have been probably close to 2 years ago with Wade.
Yes, that's right.
We were at a basketball game. I think we were just chatting over whatever, and then I told you I was still a student, and I was involved in the business side. He said, well, shit, let's get into some games.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of how our relationship sparked. And even since leaving the Premier's office and coming to work with Blake, we had a mutual friend in him that we didn't really realize after the fact.
We don't like to admit it.
Yeah, well, exactly. Not in public.
Not many people do.
Not many people would. Yeah. Why would you?
Exactly.
No, but I think from my perspective, you often don't get the kind of authenticity in some... You do on PEI, but at UPEI, some of the authenticity in terms of faculty and staff that I see with you, like, you actually genuinely care about what's going on in our day-to-day lives, and I'm not limiting that to the other faculty members, but I'm just... Yeah. What I've noticed from you is that you genuinely care in what people... What students have to say, or what's going on in their mind, what's going on in their day-to-day, and especially with student-athletes, because that's kind of where you're directly connected.
What do you do? To describe sort of your engagement, because I see you as a personality that represents UPEI.
Mm.
My kids have seen you at their school bringing athletes in. Athletes have come to different community events. So I think the whole engagement of the university and its participation and, you know, demonstrating certainly to young athletes and kids that there is a path and this is what you can become. It's
like, yeah,
contributing member of society, participating while playing sport.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Well, for 16 years, you've got to realize that all I heard about from Cindy and my father-in-law, Len, was the great days of the UPEI Panthers before I'd even came here or we moved here. So, you know, going back to the days where everybody wore track pants and T-shirts. So it was in my mind, it was something I really wanted to see more of. I was very lucky that I bumped into very early my boss and athletics director, Chris Huggin. And I remember him saying to me, it was at the very first game of the season against UMB, and we won that night, and he said, "What do you think?" And I said, it's great. It's exactly what I imagined, but I think there's more we could do. And that's how it started. So we then worked on what we felt could be the community engagement. And Chris talked about, you know, when he was a kid standing on the basketball court watching these great teams win championships, and how he wanted to get back to that, how he wanted families to come in. And that's everything to me. Family is everything to me. And so we had all these ideas, you know, I brought in from away and he brought in that he'd been carrying around, and they just collided. So then it was about building this role of how we could understand and get the Panthers back into the community. We went to UMB and met a guy called Dave Morrell, and he was incredible for me. He was a radio host, but he was also massive in bringing national championships to UMB. This is a guy that hadn't been doing the job for 2 to 3 years, but still wore the red of UMB. His truck was red. You know, everything about him was it. And I remember him saying, "Lee, if you're going to do this role, you've got to live it. You have to every day be seen in the green and black." And you look at my wardrobe now, everything's green, black, green, black. I mean, there's nothing. I can't go out anywhere. It's just green, black. But it was right to do it, because once the community could see somebody was willing to sort of billboard it and enjoy it, and that's the main key. Then it was about, right, Chris's amazing contacts in school as a school teacher and as an athletics director. So he had all the contacts. Then we put the programs together. And then we got the teachers involved, the principals involved, and then the EAs involved. And you know, and then the children had to buy into it. And that was the fun part.
I think from my observation, they have. So you've been doing this community engagement for...
Three and a half years. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, as an external observer and as a person with a young family, I can see the impact. And we've been to games. We've taken the kids to a few basketball, not as many as we probably would like to, but we've been to the arenas to see the impact, see the participation of alumni, but also of fans, and a successful product.
It is a successful product. I mean, we got to remember that these young athletes are students first, and I think that's really sometimes they forget. You know, we're not a professional sports outfit, but we do everything as professional as we can. We look after the nutrition. But at the end of the day, they have to get up every day and do 4 or 5 classes. Or they have to do laps. Or they have to do their part-time jobs. And so, and then they're doing the one thing they absolutely love is play the sport that they cherish, right? And so sometimes the community can get it out of balance a touch, and we just have to remind them of that every now and then, that they are students first. Mm-hmm. Chris has this great saying, champions for life brings championships. And I think that's really, really important. We want every single one of our student athletes to graduate. We want them to be the best they can. We want them to be good, upstanding members of society. And I think once they realize that they're being looked after, you know, orientation every year is a real big piece. We don't wrap them in cotton wool. We don't mollycoddle them. We don't help them with their exams or anything like this. You know, all those silly films that you see, like everything gets done for them. That isn't the case. They have to get up every day and be the best they can at being a student and an athlete. And if they're willing to do that, then I'm willing to go that extra mile for them and get them in the community so the community comes out and understands what they're doing.
So you mentioned athletics, academics. How important are those two pillars? Because traditionally, if you're a strong athlete, then you know maybe that's a focus. You put more attention onto the athletics. Is there balance within the current participants today?
There is a balance. I mean, I think it's funny because obviously in our athletics department, we've got a lot of alumni UPI Panther athletes, you know, Stephanie Kinnickel and all those kind of things who tell a different story of university life, as you can imagine. And the student athletes of these days don't get that downtime of the past. So there is an incredible drive because practice is, you know, you do four classes and you're on practice and then you may get on a bus and drive for 6 hours to play a game, right? So there isn't the student life of partying and everything else that you may be seeing. So you have to have it in yourself, but you also need to know that when, and be honest with yourself, and that's one of the things our student athletes are. If they are struggling with something or it's not quite what, they do have the ability to come and talk to us. We do have an open door policy, which I'm very lucky to be part of that. And that can be simply a message, a text, a WhatsApp, or just a conversation. So it's all different forms of an open door policy.
And this is across all the core varsity teams?
Yes, yes.
So this soccer right through to, I don't know what the season ends with, basketball probably, hockey? Like.
Yeah, so we go to soccer, rugby, and then and for the four sports with field hockey as well, which are a very successful club team. It used to be a varsity team, but with the AUS changing. And then right into the hockey teams and the basketball teams all the way through. So it's probably from August 1st through to March, end of March.
You mentioned rugby.
Mm.
There is a rugby team at UPI.
There is a young
rugby. I think Chris was a former rugby player.
Well, yes, he was. He was at
many
rural.
Athletic accomplishments.
And so are you, weren't you?
I've watched a lot of rugby.
Right, okay, right.
Do you play rugby?
Yes,
so
yes.
Can you tell us about your background,
yeah,
because you talked about, like, did you actually play or
yeah, I was very
like
lucky.
Shorts.
I was very yeah, the short shorts. You gotta have the legs for those though, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, I was very lucky that my dad played and my brother played, so I've been playing since the age of 7, and I was very lucky that I grew up in a village where I had a Yorkshireman for a rugby teacher when I first started playing, and then when I moved to secondary school, which is called high school here, I had a Welsh rugby teacher. And then we had a brilliant club.
Is that where you got the accent?
Oh, that's low. I love that. That's quick. And then we had a really good club system in Surrey. And Surrey was a very strong, what you call a province, we call a county. And then we had a great club. And then, you know, back then, we're talking back in, you know, 79 through 82, 83 with the school system. And then rugby didn't turn professional until 95, 96. So there was a lot of club, really good, enjoyable club rugby you could play, but you also had to have a job because the money wasn't there, right? So most of the rugby clubs like Harlequins and others like that, we would play rugby, but we also had to have jobs. And that's where my career came from, working in the security industry and stuff like that, because I had to pay for it. It wasn't until later on where I actually got some money for playing. So it's roundabout away. So
we can talk about the MI6 security, but back to your club play.
Yes, Money Penny.
Where did you travel? So you did. Who did you play with?
And Roslyn Park, and out in South Africa in Stellenbosch, and in France as well. I had a bit of time there, although it wasn't great. It was mostly been whenever I could travel with work, I joined the clubs and were able to do that. And so traveled around Europe a lot, went down to Montpellier and then around Wales and Scotland. I mean, you talk about some of the toughest I didn't get to Australia or New Zealand, but South Africa was a tough place to play. Once they realized you were English, there was a target on your back every time you touched the thing. But also it was a fun time as well, right? Nothing was ever tougher than actually going into Wales, crossing the bridge and playing at a place like Neath on a Friday night, which is a mining town. And
we had to try to get out, like visiting Picto today.
Yes. You know, everything was thrown at the bus on the way in, and everything was thrown at the bus on the way out, and everything was thrown at you on the field of play, and you know, it was.
What did you prefer, getting eggs or tomatoes thrown at you?
There wasn't eggs or tomatoes, it was coal.
Coal. That's why you're so tough.
Coal and cans full of urine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was
sometimes
it was an absolute
by our office at Blake's out shouting at the window.
Yeah. It was like when I was feeding the meter over there, and he let me put a $1.26 in or $1.25 in, and then told me there was a space for it. I mean, what a friend he is. He let me feed the meter, and then, oh, by the way, there's a free spot around the back. Yeah, thanks. So no, that were tough times and scary times. Like you know, it's you can't really concentrate catching a rugby ball when there's somebody who's going to throw a lump of coal at you as you're running down the field. But
the culture of rugby in general. So my exposure is there's a camaraderie and a dynamic that's unique to sport. When you'd be traveling internationally, maybe that's not quite as
rugby is
team players.
Well, in your rugby has that unique philosophy. It's a family game, right? And I know it sounds weird, but we are a family. Anybody that's, you know, even now with the moment, right? If you put the shirt on and cross the white line and play the toughest game in the world, then you'll have everybody's respect, right? And that's what it's about. It's a physically tough sport to play because it's 80 minutes long. It's no, you know, you're very rarely stopping. It's an avoidance sport, and I think that's where people get the confusion by. It is a game of avoidance. You have to get the ball from one end of the field to the other. If somebody has to come down your alley and you have to tackle them, you have to tackle them. But we train kids from a very early age through rookie rugby and then introduction to contact the right way. And it's, you know, cheek, shoulder, wrap. Make sure the head's out of the way. Make sure you go from the side. So it's an incredible game. It's a physical game and it's a tough game. And so you leave everything on the field. And as you know, the minute you get off, you shake hands with the opposition, even though you've been in a real battle, and you have a beer. And that stops everything. That means it doesn't go into the stands, the bleachers. It doesn't need to because everything's out there.
And there's respect for the officials.
100%. One of the first things my father told me: that guy out there with a whistle is sir to you. Don't ever make it any different.
It's different. It's unique from sport. Certainly unique to hockey. You play hockey.
I never played rugby mostly because I was a string bean in high school. But
you're a bit too pretty for rugby.
I gotta get more girth to me now, so maybe someday soon I'll try. Yeah, I was mostly hockey growing up. I wasn't very good at that either, but never dabbled with rugby.
If you do get a chance, I mean, rugby can always find you at all times in life. And I started playing again at 50, which is with the mob, and it's been an absolute blast. It really has. It's a game that you can go back to whenever you want. And even if you play 5 or 10 minutes, it's that banter. It's the friendship, the understanding of what a tough game it is, and also the ability to get that damn ball down one end of the field, which everybody thinks, oh, it's so easy. It isn't.
No. It doesn't look easy.
It seemed easy for you. I think you scored a nice try on your 50th birthday.
I think I was offside, if I'm being honest. But it was nice. It was nice to do so, and it was good fun.
And you're coaching the Mudmen, so that's a change, and very successful club. Won't dwell too much on rugby, but they have had a pretty successful...
They've got an incredible, you know, over the years and the coaches they've had, the ethics and the understanding of the way the game should be played is absolutely spot on. I mean, PEI... Let's take all sports, and I'll come back to the rugby in a minute, but let's take all sports on this island. This island has an incredible wealth of athletes. And, you know, it's unique again. For a small province, if you think about some of the international coaches that are here, some of the players that are international athletes, and then you look at club level or maritime championship levels and some of these, I am very blessed to look at this men's Mudmen rugby team right now and with the structure coming through the schools, high schools, and then into provincial through James Hoy and the Abbeys, to have a group of players that understand the game. So then when you mold them, it's an easy way to do. And I'm very lucky that I've stepped into the shoes of some fantastic coaches in the past that have made a brilliant club. And so last year was a learning book for me, and we were still maritime champions. This year we go again, and we just try and bring in different ideas for these boys. Try and make sure that it's enjoyable, it's knowledgeable, and then performance comes from that. So
I'm going to switch subjects a little bit, because we keep talking about rugby. No doubt.
Well, I'll just get confused more too, yeah.
And I'm too humble to really let this dwell on me. It's not
I want to talk about your career.
It's not
one fair. Thing we talked even before we hit record about how UPEI athletes are different compared to a lot of other universities. So what does differentiate UPEI student athletes versus, let's say, in Toronto or even St. FX or wherever the case may be, just because they're...
How to select them, you know...
Yeah,
because it's academic, it's athletic, it's community.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, the coaches have a tough job. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I was talking to Coach Glenn this morning, and you know, he's just come off a 2-game weekend against Dow, number 2 team in the country, and it's tough. And you know, these you know, it was almost like watching boys play men in the sense of the physicality of the game, right? And so you're trying. You know, you've only got a short time to build and blend a team together pre-season. And then in the middle of that, you've got the education side of things. You've got to make sure they're happy. But then these kids are arriving. They may be living away for the first time. They may be living with somebody for the first time. They may be cooking for themselves. Mum may have got them out of bed for the last 5 years, right? So we have to make sure that when they arrive through the orientation piece, that they can cope with coming to a small province, a small university, 4,500 students. But the difference is they're a name here. They're not a number. You know, we went to nationals, and I won't say who it was to play rugby, and won't say the name of the university. It took us 25 minutes to drive across campus. There was 40,000 people there. Now, you can't tell me that you're going to get the same experience at a 40,000 capacity. Yeah. And you know, the same as 4,500. So we do a lot of NSOs, new student orientations, and I'm very lucky and pleased to say that I'm part of all of those, and I really enjoy it. And I want, and even if you're not a student athlete, I want you to know, and we get a lot of international students here, that they are a Panther from the minute they arrive. Even if they never play sport, or even if they play just recreation, they are Panthers. And we have the thing that when they're walking around and I see them, I always put my thumbs up. Thumbs up is good. Thumbs down is not, they're not doing so great. Then we chat. And that's from the very first time I see them. And they do. They still do. 2 or 3 years on, they're always still doing the thumbs up. But it's an international way of saying, yeah, I'm okay, right? But they know, even if I haven't sort of been in a class with them, or they haven't been part of our athletics department, there's still somebody walking through campus just saying, oh, you're okay.
And that's what I noticed too, because I probably could have tried to play athletics or sport at UPI, but I don't think I would have made it. But even just through when we met, every time I see it, hey, Sam, what's going on? What's new? How's it going? I think that's what people kind of, not that the, and a lot of like other universities, like you said, are too big. They don't have that connectivity versus UPI. You're able to have that kind of interconnecting student and faculty or whatever the case may be. And I think you do a good job of leading by example.
I appreciate that. But, you know, a simple smile and an open a door for somebody can make a day, right? Can. It generally can. I mean, it's as simple as that. You could be, the students on our campus, and I mean all of them, spend so much time studying by themselves, that then when they get outside, is that they're still in that sort of focused element, and they're not really looking for contact, or they're maybe not looking for a discussion, but even a simple smile, that hold a door open or a thumbs up, you can make their day. So
I like that thumbs up, thumb down analogy. So if you see me on the rugby pitch, and if I'm not first string Division I, my thumb is down, you'll know why. And then we can talk about it. You can see, well, how do we take Sheldon Cudmore off the first division? Can we get his spot? But so if students, there's a lot of stress. I mean, there always has been. But I think today, maybe more so, because social media plays a big impact on people's, you know, there's a lot of pressure from even observing, being engaged with social media. There's financial pressures, which are different. There's cost of tuition, accommodation. Like, there's a lot of pressure. And if you're an athlete on top of that, it's a big impact. Do you see that in the students as far as how they adapt to these challenges and maintain good mental balance?
Yeah, I think, you know, the athletics department, Chris and Ron and he is our varsity coordinator, has an incredible relationships with a lot of the professors and a lot of the deans. And that's important too. We're not asking for special, you know, special...
But it's all students. But it's athletics for sure, because they've got another compounding impact, but every student probably affects.
And then behind that, you need a great student affairs department, right? And I talk about it a lot. And under Trina Smith, that group is incredible. You know, so they're out there in the community. What students don't realize is that they don't have to carry everything around in their backpack. They don't have to be trying to find an answer for everything. There are ways to find answers with just simply asking those questions or stepping into student affairs. The systems on UPI are incredible. They're there to make students succeed. They're there to make students graduate. They are not there to make students fail. And so, but it's getting that information out and these students then taking it on board and running with it. So if we have to walk them across and make that first introduction, that's probably the best thing I can do. I can do it 4-5 times in a day. I can do it one time in a day. But with that team and Michelle and that group and Anne and whatever, Anne Barthett, I know that if I took a student or a student athlete over there, we'd find an answer for them. And it really sometimes can just be time. So accommodation gets put into place. It can just be that moment in time when they've just got so much on their plate that they need somebody just to plan their day for them. So, you know, we can sit down with that one person. They may not feel comfortable doing an exam in a massive sports hall. Or they can do that in an individual room as long as it's locked down and they're by themselves. There are so many different things we can do. And it's not a weakness. It's not a weakness for ask for help. right? It really is not. I know it sounds, I'm making it sound easy, but just asking for help can be...
The tools are there. They're
there are.
No, absolutely. I know to reach out to, too. Like, oh, I can talk to Lee, and he'll point me in the right direction kind of thing, or I can talk to whoever, and he'll guide me to this person or whatever.
Our campus is a pretty cool place. Sister Sue is probably one of the most unique people you could ever meet. But look at her heart. Look at how she cares about all people, all religions, everybody on that campus. She's at every game. You know, you see her, she's smiling, she's bubbly, she's ready to help. And that's what we're about. It's a campus that cares, and that's really important.
Students. So I was a student EPI. Sam is a student EPI.
Were you a mature student, or were you just there?
I was there so long that I became mature before I finished. I aged well.
Yeah. Did you graduate?
I did, of course, yes. Right. I went on to get other degrees, in fact,
on
the university. Yeah.
What, the 4 degrees?
I've got a couple. You can get them in gumball machines, too.
Fantastic.
What's a student engagement like? Because I think, when I attended, it was a championship period of seasons for hockey primarily. Basketball is exceptional. In fact, the current coach played basketball.
Mm. Yeah, Darryl Glenn. Yeah.
How engaged are students in athletics? Because it tends to go in...
Yeah.
Oscillates, I guess, in peaks and valleys. And, you know, the games I've been at, my sense is that there could be more student participation. Is there anything that's preventing students to go? Is it a cost factor?
The cost factor is zero, right? It's part of their athletics payments at the beginning of the year, and it's free of charge for them. All our games are free to them. It's really getting that balance between studying, school, labs, life, you know, and we're a transient university, right? We only have 600 students on campus at any one time. So it's not as though we're St. FX where you're locked down in a small town and that's it. It's everything, right?
Yeah.
We're not that. And we also have three other, you know, main players in town. Holland College is doing an amazing job with their athletics department. You got the Storm and you got the Islanders.
And
the Mudman. Well, that I didn't want to, you know, that's free of charge on a Saturday from 2 o'clock all the way through the season. Co-op Field, great place. We're very lucky that we work very, very closely with student life. So they get some great nights out. We have some pep rallies and they're doing a great job down there. But we have to bolster our crowds through schools. We get an incredible response from our local schools and communities by doing assemblies with our kids. We're doing the Reading with Pride program right now, which has been an amazing thing. 7 schools in the inner cities and it's gone down so well. Athletes giving time back. So we're not looking... You know, if we get students from campus in, it's a bonus, like the business society turning up.
Well, if I show up, everyone's going to come. That's just a given.
Yeah.
It's bigger than the actual sport.
Wait, if there's an opening of an envelope, he's usually there, right? So, it's he worked with Wade, so you know what it's like, right?
Yeah.
If there's a free buffet,
and an open envelope. There's a camera.
Yeah, exactly.
Place he's in front of it.
Yeah. You don't have teeth that white and a hair that's styled that, like that, unless you are waiting for a camera to arrive at any time.
He's always ready.
Exactly.
One thing I noticed about sports since I started in 2015 at school, at UPEI, and you were hired in like mid 2016.
Yeah.
Since then, when I started going there, there wasn't a bar at the hockey rink, but
right
now there is. Did you have any reason? Is any of that because of you?
I think not. If you go to Britain, most sports grounds have bars, right? Cardiff isn't a sports ground, or anyway. Stop bringing up Wales. Jeez. That's a scary place. We had to find other ways of getting students in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a $3.50 beer seems to be the way to do it, right?
Very
so it is an easy way. But for us, our real big push has been kids.
Mm.
If we can get families in there, we got voted best date night last year at the bar school. It was kind of funny. I mean, this couple went on the radio and said, you know, we took our young children, they ran around the track for 80 minutes while we sat there and watched our UPI
and
campus.
They slept really well.
They slept exactly. You could see it. And that, for me, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly how it should be. Bring your family. Kids are always free, you know, so have
fun.
And
that just, like we talked about, the UPI is trying to push alumni engagement. That's just a perfect way to do it. Bring alumni and their families there, and they're going to more likely to maybe either contribute their time or funds towards the university.
It is, you know, but we've got 23,000, nearly 24,000 alumni, and a lot of them live away, live abroad, right? A lot of the alumni are not on the island. So, you know, what alumni we do get out, hockey has an incredible alumni. I mean, look at those 90 at the recent alumni night, which is amazing.
Mm.
So we're very thankful when they arrive and they do come. but our we've got to get the next generation. We've got to get the next generation of families and fans. And that's difficult because a lot of families are spending a lot of time in rinks right now or at the court.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then there's that, do I really want to go and watch another team play when I've just been at the rink since 5 a.m. this morning?
Right.
So we have to make it different. And the only way you can do that is host nationals and also have teams that are nationally ranked, like our women's basketball and our women's hockey. That's when the enthusiasm comes out. And then it's like, wow, these kids are winners as well as students.
And a lot of people wouldn't even realize that. Like, until, like, let's say a month ago, no one would know that the UPA women's team was, the hockey team was fourth in the country. And it's like, that's, there's a lot of universities in Canada. Like, that's a big,
yeah,
crazy
and
stat.
Bruce Olson and that team and the structure of that team and Donnie McFadden, he's, you know, part of that team. And
former
he,
rugby player?
Former rugby player.
He's actually my vice principal in grade four.
He's an unbelievable man, right? And he, but he's, there's that, he's your go-to guy for everything. You know, he'll go and do the food shop in 1 minute. He'll pick you up from the airport next. But he, what he is very, very good at is being that extra tutor for the teams. And he tutors a lot of our student athletes from all of our teams. And so it's a great structure. Our girls were doing very well. We hosted nationals last year. We weren't very successful. It was a great tournament. But the girls suddenly realized, actually, we can compete nationally. Mm-hmm. The great article in the Guardian newspaper at the end of that championship was the girls came through the back door, which meant that obviously we hosted it. But they left through the front door with their heads held high. And the girls took that on board. And then at Christmas, they went up and beat McGill during the Christmas period, and they came back flying. They were ready to go for this. And so they're suddenly in the top 10, then they're 8, then there was 7, then there was 6, then they went to 4, then they went to 3, and then they're back to 4 right now. And it's a self-belief. It's once you realize that you know you can do it, and you can be the best you can, and you can step up, and you don't have to be scared, then it can take you to another level.
And I think that kind of community feel from UPEI translates to sports in terms of, sure, there might be a couple players that are a little better than others, which happens on any team, but it's a team effort and everyone's on the same bus moving forward, that we gotta go,
yeah.
All systems go, otherwise we're not gonna be fourth in the country.
Team is everything, right? It really is. Team, family, you know, we talk about all of those things in rugby, but it is the case. But it is. I mean,
yeah.
You have 15 people on a field. If one of those people decide that they're not gonna bother and try that day, then somebody runs down that alley all day long and you're done. Same in hockey. Somebody doesn't defend. Somebody decides they're not going to shoot. Basketball. Somebody turns up and they're not guard. You know, you have to be a unit. A team has to be everything. You have to be focused. You have to be going in the same direction. The coach has to be able to drive that bus, look in the back mirror and say, I have got the people I want. And if I have the people I want, I know I can win. And that's difficult every single day because these kids are doing so much. So it's pretty special.
Jim Collins, is it the Good to Great? Is that it's the guys in the bus? I think it might be an analogy to a business book. But here, just a question on so you have been not quite 4 years, and my expectation is it would take not less than 4 years to kind of see the fruits of your efforts.
Right.
If you look at community engagement post-graduation, and I think as your participation evolved, and you're probably at peaking now because you've grown the program, do you see any impacts to the students who graduated that have had community engagement and how that has impacted their life outside of UPI, outside of athletics? Have they maintained that community commitment?
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you instilled core beliefs in people that have stayed with them?
Yeah.
And it's early to measure that, but I think that's the benefit of what you're doing, connecting with the community. In 10 years' time, you'll see that, I think, more pronounced.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Kira Rigby was a prime example of somebody that embraced school life, embraced being an elite athlete, an All-Canadian. But her biggest focus was community. I mean, you know her dad, right? I mean, Gourmanidi is that guy as well, right? So you know you were going to get that. But, you know, she was voted the number one community athlete in Canada. And that, you know, and that's on top of her being an All-Canadian, 82% average. An AUS All-Star, in part of the U Sports number one team in the country at that time. So, and then she went and got the award where she was able to balance the community award for that. You know, and that's what is amazing. You know, I think it's in everybody to give, and I love that because that's a brilliant line from the Canadian Blood Services. It's in everybody to give. It's where you find it in their hearts and what they can give. We get a lot of student athletes that will volunteer to do a lot for us. We then just have to work out how much they can really give without it then becoming unfun. Yeah, exactly. You know, and so we work on that. We know the ones that will work out their planning so that 1 hour a week is absolutely spot on. But I think what we're seeing is that we're seeing once they graduate is that they still follow us. We're seeing that in our numbers through social media, through Facebook, through Instagram, through Twitter. Our numbers are going, always growing and growing and growing, because once they've left, they're a Panther for life.
Right.
And they're looking back and enjoying what they're seeing.
That's important reach for university and for alumni.
Yeah.
You maintain that connection. That's how you're going to connect.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to engage. That's how you're going to have participation as they mature through their professional careers.
Yeah, and that's interesting for me. So, you know, here I am, 6'5", 280, English guy, telling everybody how wonderful UPI and PI is, right? But I think it's because I was able to come from away and experience so many different things that the island still hasn't experienced yet in the way of sport and the way people should be treated, in the sense of what time spans, that I have a totally different focus on it and I have a totally different look. And the crazy thing about it is, though, everybody feels the same right now. We all get 24 hours, but we've just got to work out how we use it. And I'm telling you, this island is going in an amazingly positive place. It's really cool to be around.
So in that vein, if you were to look forward 10 years into the future, either from UPEI, from the island's perspective, what do you see as the future for PEI? 10 years, that's far enough that
you'll still be playing rugby then anyways.
So. Oh yeah. And then Blake will be still trying to be getting a game, which, you know.
That'll be fun.
So, yeah. But I he's probably one of the best orange cutters I've ever seen in the game.
That's important. You know, don't underestimate
everybody on the team.
It's a team thing, right? And he sharpens his knives on a Friday and he cuts the oranges on a Saturday.
Yeah, the armor class not like use knives. So
no.
He has to cut them with his teeth.
Right, absolutely. Well, we've even had to take his shoelaces away from there and that, so that's kind of worrying. What I see is the next generation of business structured people like yourself are going to come through and take this island to another level. You genuinely are, because the knowledge the business community has on this island and the ability to see 1, 2, 3, 4 years down the line of what will be the next big thing is incredible. It really is. I mean, it's impressive to watch. So yes, I think the community will grow, but let me make this one point on this community piece of 153,000 on this island. I come from a county called Surrey, which is a third of the size of PEI, and we have 1.9 million people living in it.
Right.
If you take PEI and take the three nearest counties to where I live, which are Surrey, Kent and Sussex, which is almost exactly the same size and width as PEI, was 5.8 million. 153,000 really isn't, you know, a big deal. So there will be growth there.
Yeah.
There will be, but I think if it's put in the right direction, the growth will be so valuable for this island that it will grow as it can and will be handled and managed properly. If it decides to take big bucks and big money and try and grow itself and not be an island, then there could be problems. But I don't think that will happen, because deep down everybody has the island in their heart and they want to make sure it stays an island and it's the smallest province and it's this and it's this and it's this.
Right? So you see good things.
I see extremely exciting things, yeah, definitely.
So the context of my question, I think you missed a little bit. It was, in the next 10 years, do you see me playing first division? But maybe I missed that and how I articulated the question.
You mentioned shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard, yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm not too sure what that is, but he's definitely up for that.
I think it'll be his age. Bracket.
Yeah. Isn't it one of those things like you play on the deck of a cruise ship?
Yes, yes.
Oh, you're in.
Yes, I know.
You are definitely.
Sam wants to send me on a cruise. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
Hopefully it's the same one.
That
non-return. I hope it's always that one that's just docked in Tokyo.
Southeast Asia.
Yeah, the coronavirus on it or whatever it is that we have. I see exciting things. I see exciting times ahead for my kids, which is really, really important. We have Lewis, 22.
So here's a question. You've got how many children?
3.
All born outside of Canada. So they've got an affinity, presumably some connection.
Yeah.
Certainly to back home, Australia. do you see all of your children? Because I've got 4 kids. I often reflect on...
I don't have any kids that I know of, for sure. So.
But we're confident you will. You would have a confidence.
Yeah.
Do you see your children staying on PEI? Is that a good thing? Do you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Lewis, he's 22. When he moved here, he was 18. graduated from Holland College. He's a graphic designer. He's now back on the island working here full time with a guy called Jeremy Versi, and he's loving it. And he just, and Sam's 15 at Rural, loving life, and Sadie's 12 at Stratford. Yeah, I can see them totally living here. We went back at Christmas to England, and as much as it was great to see my dad and my family, all of us very, very quickly realized that we were in an incredible spot, which is PI, and we couldn't wait to get home. And this is home for us. And I do see them living here, and I do see them raising their families. We're not, the difference is that we've been from away, right?
Right.
So there's a lot of children, and when we're, and a lot of kids, when we're going around the schools, and I always ask this question, so how many of you are looking to go to UPI? Mm. And the numbers are going up in the last 3 or 4 years. I got to say, you know, at the beginning was like, one, and they're almost embarrassed to put their hand up, right?
It's community engagement.
It
takes the team, like we talk about, the teams that are ranked fourth in the country, like little things like that. It's like, oh, wow, okay, UPI means
something.
And obviously the education is kind of, but the engagement stuff like that, it makes it more
interesting. It does. It really does. And they can see that, you know, if they come and there's fun on the campus and there's, the teams are doing well and there's recreational sports and there's other stuff, you know. And suddenly that thought of, when I get to 18, I need to get off this island, is gradually changing.
Mm. And people who do that regret it 4 years later. Like,
what is funny,
I want to come home.
Yeah, exactly. You almost have to go away to realize how lucky you are.
I've been a big proponent of that since even when I was in high school. My friends talking about going away, I was like, what do we not have here that you're going elsewhere for? Like
Costco.
Yeah, well.
Costco. Yeah.
I say if we have Amazon Prime, so it's pretty
much. Yeah. IKEA. Damn store. The devil's store, that one. IKEA. It gets you in a corral, you can't get out of the bloody thing.
Well, and then you get a box and put together.
Exactly, yeah. Right. With those stupid screwdrivers. Nobody has a screwdriver, you know, nobody has a screwdriver to do the thing with.
One thing Moncton does have that we don't, I'll let people guess what it is, but we can talk about that another time. That PEI doesn't have. It's an establishment that is usually frowned upon, but
oh, it's the Olympic-sized stadium.
Yes,
good, actually. That's a great benefit.
Yeah.
In fact, we plan that this weekend. I've got little kids, 12-year-olds. I don't know how they're going to get around the ice surface. I think it's 15 feet wider, so they'll probably put an extra player
on
it.
Wow. Is that the Avery? Yeah, that's what an amazing place that is.
Four ice surfaces.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's, you can see why we want one here, but do we need it? I don't know.
That's the question. Look, we can bring people on.
We'll bring it back if that decision comes on. But I think that's a good place to wrap up. There was no tears shed, so this was a good episode.
Well, close on the Australian Wales thing there for a while.
Anyways, we appreciate Lee coming in today to talk to us, and we'll likely hear from him again soon. And if you're ever on UPEI, he's the tall, big dude that is always smiling, always wearing green and black. He's Panther pride through and through. So we thank you very much for coming
on the exchange. Thank you, gentlemen. It was an absolute pleasure.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Lee. So that was the gentle giant, Mr. Lee Reed of no, he's not Welsh. He's
Australian. No. Irish.
He's a leprechaun. No, he's not Irish. He's from England.
Okay.
Banstead, I think, is what we said. Anyways, awesome interview with a great guy.
And he knows, I think he knows, I don't know if it's Meghan Markle or Harry, but he might have played rugby with Harry. I don't know. He is English by his own admission.
No, but unfortunately, we had to fix the door frame when he left, but just because his shoulders broke through it. But that's okay. We have it in our budget.
I've seen them break through tackles as well.
Right.
He's broad-shouldered. And he didn't play rugby last year. We didn't talk much about that. He might have played a game, but he says he's going to play this year, and we'll see. He's actually the coach.
You and him can be Division I starters, probably.
Well, he'll coach Division I, and I'll be the starter.
The orange peeler. But awesome to have Lee in. And he's kind of full force getting ready for the U-Sport Women's National Hockey Championships, which are the 12th to the 15th, I believe, of March. So he's working relentlessly. He's actually been asking me if I want to buy some tickets on the side.
Is that right? Side hustling.
Buy some tickets. I can't wait to go because it's going to be a great event. It'll be packed rink, and it's good for the UPEI community and PEI as a whole.
And so, you know, the UPEI, so the community, the sporting community, I think really because of Lee's direction, I've taken kids to games. We've done basketball, hockey, overlapping games. It's really been a great engagement. Mm-hmm. And the rinks are full. And the basketball courts are full. Of course, the basketball team are doing exceptionally well. So,
I was at the women's game probably a week and a half ago. They lost, unfortunately.
I showed up Saturday at the Sports Center looking for the game. It was in Halifax, unfortunately. But
rough. Anyways, I went to that game, but it was the fullest I've seen the McLaughlin Arena, the Kerry, whatever you want to call it, since Joel Ward played. And that was when I was very young, but that's the
most amount of people I've seen in a long, long time. And that probably a lot of that was contributed to Lee because he was hounding me. It's free for UPI students for the playoffs, but still it was, okay, can you get 20 guys? It's like, I'll try my best. And then it's not hard to sell it, especially when there's a bar right
beside it. It's good hockey.
No, it's awesome. It's fast-paced. Like, yeah. I could probably crack the second line, but I couldn't crack the first line.
I haven't been asked. I'd go out for some trials. I mean,
Bruce Donaldson, will give him a ring, and hopefully he'll let us try it next year.
Maybe the men's team, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't make that team. Waterboy. Anyway, so looking forward into next week.
Let's not reveal.
No,
I think it's more interesting to...
It's a cliffhanger every time.
Yeah, so send your comments in if you have a suggestion on who you want to hear, but we will announce that, what day, Monday? Release it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Sometime between Monday and
Wednesday. If I'm not too busy working.
Well, you'll be too busy. So Wednesday. You'll know a week from
so
Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, the Exchange, hosted by Confederation Group. It's a blast, as always, with Mr. Blake Doyle across from me. I hope he reciprocates that feeling. Maybe, maybe not.
I'm not going to comment, no.
Okay, no comment. But yes. All right, well, we'll be back next week. As always, Blake Doyle, Sam McPhail. This is The Exchange, presented by Confederation Group.